Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. It's Friday. The Labour Party is packing its swimming trunks and heading to the beach for the party conference this weekend. So on today's episode of the podcast, we take a look at what can go wrong at party conferences. It's an absolute cracker. So that's coming up in just a sec. But first, it's our columnist panel. It's Friday, so it must be Melanie Reed and James Forsyth. We'll talk about things that can go wrong at party conferences and when things have gone wrong for you in a moment. But James, let's look ahead to the party conference season, well, at least the politics of it all. And there's been lots of talk about winter of discontent, and you've tackled this in your column in the Times today, talking about the spectre of the 70s haunts the Tories, and this combination of rising bills, rising inflation could start to become a political problem.
Yeah, there are some eerie parallels for the 70s. If what drove the inflation in the 70s was the abandonment of a gold standard in 71 and the oil shock of 73, 74. The oil price went up by four times. Now, we've just seen the gas price go up more than fourfold in a year. And I mean, there are some parallels between all the QE and COVID stimulus that was done to keep the economy going during lockdown and the abandonment of the gold standard. And I mean, the worry for the Tory party is, you know, inflation is one of those things. Margaret Thatcher always used to say that, you know, governments could survive unemployment, but they couldn't survive high inflation because that affected everybody. That made everybody feel worse off. And I mean, that is the big worry for the Tories right now, is that, you know, everyone at the moment is betting that, you know, the Bank of England said yesterday, we're going to keep interest rates where they are because we're convinced that the current levels of inflation, the rising levels of inflation, they're transitory. They're just effectively a product of turning the economy off and switching it back on again. And soon all of these issues will work their way through the system. The danger is, if it's not transitory and we are moving into an era of higher inflation, that will be very politically difficult for the government.
And you make the point that Boris Johnson, particularly his favourite boast at the moment, is talking about how pay packets are getting bigger, but they could soon be eaten up quite quickly if inflation rises.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the biggest decisions the government has to take is what to do about HGV drivers, whether to basically add them to the skilled worker list and issue lots more visas for lorry drivers, because at the moment, the government are arguing, and they are not wrong about this point, that, you know, that Brexit has resulted in higher wages. And the Boris Johnson argument is that, you know, basically people are getting what they voted for. But the question is, you know, if you can't source enough lorry drivers, that becomes problematic. I think you're seeing a big tension here, which is almost a kind of game of chicken between the government and industry. The government's view is, if you pay people enough, You know, there are lots of people in this country who have an HGV license who aren't driving an HGV. If the wages rise enough, you will get enough lorry drivers up against the industry, which is saying, hang on a second, we're not sure that we will. And also, have you thought through the consequences of if we're having to pay lorry drivers, you know, there's talk today of a salary of £78,000 being offered, you know, what effect that has on prices. So I think this is one of the biggest calls the government will make, because, where does it go on this whole question of Brexit, wages and immigration?
Melanie, how's this, because you're in Scotland, how is this playing out in Scotland? Whether it's the gas price issue, the lorry driver issue, is it a big political issue? Are people who's getting the political blame for it?
Well, that is a very interesting one. Obviously, the SNP will try and make it Westminster's problem, but I think that it will come back. When it comes back down to that word cost of living, you do tend to look at the government of the nearest possible government, don't you, to blame. So I think it is going to hurt the SNP, who are already having to bring in the army to drive ambulances. So I think it will add to that frailty around power at the moment, if you like. I thought James's column was excellent because it did was also highlight this thing about rebalancing of income differentials. In effect, what Johnson is saying is, you know, more for working people and less for the people who live on dividends and profits. You know, it can almost be seen as a fairly socialist thing to do to turn it that way. And very, very interesting balancing point coming up. And the other thing I would like to say is that you two are children compared to me.
That's very kind.
My youth is coming back to haunt me because, I mean, the cost of living, it's such a retro expression. But, you know, I grew up doing my exams by candlelight, and my father had an ammunition dump, a petrol dump in the garage. He had about sort of 50 gallons of petrol in there, you know, and we lived on a bomb. And, you know, it's that whole thing about, then I went into the 80s and I was paying horrendous mortgage rates. So we really don't want that to come around again, please. And you don't want it either. So it's fascinating point in our history.
I mean, this is one of the really crucial points that Melanie just made. You know, we've had a decade now, over a decade, where the bank rate has been below 1%. So people who have a mortgage have been paying, you know, very little in terms of interest. And, you know, if you think back to the 80s or to the early 90s, you know, interest rates used to go up by, you know, 1-2 points at a time. No one is used to that happening now. And I think this is one of the big things, is if mortgage rates do go up, even to levels that are historically low, I think lots of families with mortgages will suddenly feel a huge squeeze because they just have not been used to, they've been used to their mortgage payments being very low. And so even if interest rates just tick up a bit, I think families will really feel that pinch.
And how does, I mean, to some extent, it's only really a problem for the government if Labour managed to weaponise it successfully, James. And so how can they do that? Because I'm slightly conscious that for most of sort of Ed Miliband's leadership, they spent the whole time tutting and saying, oh, have you seen the price of this? And it didn't really sort of hit home. At the moment, the government is trying to say, well, this is all the fault of, well, obviously they're not blaming Brexit, but, you know, forces beyond our control. How can the Labour Party exploit this politically to sort of hammer home their message that they would in some way be in a better position?
I think that in one way it is more difficult for the Tories now than it was when Ed Miliband was Labour leader. When George Osborne used to argue that, you know, don't worry about these cost of living attacks because we can just turn cost of living into a tax issue. You know, who is going to tax you more? Who's going to leave you more of your own money to spend? That is obviously harder for the Tories now because they've just had to raise national insurance in an attempt to try and deal with this NHS backlog issue and social care. And so that is more difficult. But I think you are right. You know, I also say this, I think empty shelves and petrol shortages are very bad news for any government. They just make the government look incompetent. If you think about how all powerful Tony Blair was after his 1997 landslide. The one time when the polls got bad for him was during the petrol protests, when you couldn't fill up your car. And I think that is the danger for the government. The danger for the government is that if you get into a situation where people can't fill up their car, whatever the deficiencies of Keir Starmer and Labour, people will just turn on the government.
Do you think that that's... Melanie, you said that the SNP will try to blame Boris Johnson. If people can't start, you know, possibly, and obviously we should stress, it's not a huge number of petrol stations at the moment which don't have enough... which don't have petrol, but... could it become an issue for Nicola Sturgeon? Is there calls for her to do more on this lorry driver issue?
Well, yes. And again, do you remember there was the petrol drivers strike up here a few years ago? And there was that same, as James was saying, that petrol shortage. And people get really cross when they can't fill their tanks up. And there was a lot. I don't think it was Sturgeon was in power then, but there was a lot of pressure on the government to do something to persuade Ineos, who run the big Grangemouth plant, to settle the resolution, to settle the problem. And I think it will. I think I do think it will. It won't be good for the SNP.
Yeah, we'll see. Although Nicola Sturgeon's ability to dodge all of that stuff is quite remarkable in the past. Melanie, you wanted to talk about the Ryder's Cup. Now, sell this to me, because I confess I'm not a massive golf fan.
Well, it is an extraordinarily peculiar esoteric circus. It's kind of a small war, this sort of rowdy madness. Rick Broadbent has written a lovely piece in the Times today describing it as a tribal treat. And it's so true, because you have these team of very selfish. I mean, golf is a very individual, very selfish sport. You get all these guys play their personal their individual gladiators. They're playing together. They have to play as a team. And basically, most of the Americans hate each other. And they lose all their team spirit. Whereas the Europeans band together and they play way above themselves, and you get gangs of grown men supporters wearing strange hats with European stars on them, singing the Ode to Joy.
Can you explain the cheese hats? Why have the European teams been wearing cheese on their head?
That sums it up. It's madness. It's really, it's a sort of, I think they do it partly to taunt the Americans, because they get fed up with this, you're the man, get in the hole, you know, all this kind of, these awful American golf supporters, and all the bimbo wives, the trophy wives that have to wear uniforms. I mean, it's awful. It's hilarious. It's, I can't play golf now, but it is a little world in itself. It's very amusing.
James, maybe this is what you and I need when we go to the party conferences. We need hats of cheese.
I think I'm probably you than me, Matt.
I think you could pull it off, James. Just before I let you both go, what's the worst thing that's happened to you when you've been away for work? Have either of you got a story you feel able to share with the class?
I was once staying in a hotel. I was heavily pregnant and I was away on business, on work for the time, staying in a hotel, and the fire alarm went off, and because my ankles were swollen, I couldn't get my shoes on. And so I was standing heavily pregnant and barefoot out in the middle of the street in the middle of winter, and I felt like a waif. It was most embarrassing.
I think we'll let you off with that. Anything you want to share, James?
My worst was, I remember one morning, the phone in my hotel room rang at kind of 7:15, and a voice said, "Are you coming?" And I said, "What to?" And it turned out that I'd agreed to speak at a fringe meeting that began at 7:30, the breakfast fringe, and I was still in bed at 7:15, and it required a rather rapid getting up, getting dressed, and then to make it worse, when I got there, I thought I must just be chairing it. It turned out I was meant to have opinions on the subject, which I did not have very many. And that was definitely it was a very technical one of those, you know, one of those party conference fringes with very, very technical questions about particular. I think it was something about annuities.
I had a similar experience, but I don't think I was in bed, but I do remember sort of basically not prepping for a thing, thinking I was checked, and then I got, and I think it was to do with sort of economic regeneration of the motor, the from Croydon to the coast or something. It was like a very specific part of the southeast with people who had very strong views on exactly where sort of redevelopment money should be spent. And I confess,
you can tell who hasn't prepped properly at party conference when, by the frequency of which they say, "What you need to do is step back and look at the big picture." always the revealing phrase.
Yeah, I think we should put this in the broader context of where we are nationally. Melanie Reed and James Forsyth. Then, of course, you can read them in the Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, what can go wrong at the party conferences?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now it's time for this. Conference. Party conferences. Yes, we're off to the party conference. But sometimes things can go wrong. I mean, a big speech can make or break a career.
We import 2/3 of our cheese. That is a disgrace.
I mean, whatever happened to her? On the subject of speeches, the key thing is don't read just everything on the auto cue.
We need to be investing in skills, investing in our young people. And, strong message here, not cutting student numbers.
Strong message here indeed. Whatever happened to him? Now, at conference you often see things that you never want to see, like Matt Hancock singing Happy Birthday to himself. In fact, I once wrote that Matt Hancock had sung Happy Birthday to him, and he messaged me and said, that's not true. I did not sing Happy Birthday to myself. So I sent him that video and didn't hear back. The only thing worse than Matt Hancock singing Happy Birthday to himself is this.
I'm gonna send a real good time.
Matt Hancock again. Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop you there. If only Matt Hancock had known when to stop and not have himself such a good time, he might not have got himself in all that trouble. Now, you also, at party conference, you need to be very careful about exactly what you're going to say.
The illegal immigrant who cannot be deported because, and I am not making this up, because he had a pet cat.
Yeah, the only problem with that was she had made it up. Forget the party conference hall, though. Like the Edinburgh Festival in Claudia Winkleman's forehead, all of the action is on the fringe. But if you are going to spend an hour in a halitosis-riddled meeting room, make sure you get a seat. A couple of years ago, when we were at the Lib Dem conference, I leant against the wall and turned all the lights off. But before anyone there could blame it on Brexit, I just used a shoulder blade to turn them all back on again. And that was the most exciting thing that happened in the meeting, which lasted more than an hour. Now, political parties hate fringe meetings, though, because the news there, they cannot control. But plans to divert attention from the fringe meetings rarely work, as The Times' very own Daniel Finkelstein explains.
When I was working for Michael Ancram as the chairman of the Conservative Party, it was decided, I think rather foolishly, we ought to try to distract attention from fringe meetings by holding, as a party, our own fringe meetings. So a proposal was made that we ought to do a number of things, one of which was going to be a bonfire of regulation to be held on the beach or on the seafront in Bournemouth. And I did start by saying that it was a little bit difficult because we hadn't actually got any regulations that we decided that we wanted to get rid of. So what would people actually put on this bonfire regulations? At which point someone else suggested people could bring regulations and throw them on the fire. I said, I don't know about anyone else, but normally when I come to conference, I leave my regulations at home. I didn't think that idea was going to work. At which point someone chipped in and said that we'd have to make sure people had something for lunch while this bonfire regulation was going on. And my colleague Rick Nye suggested we have a barbecue of regulations. We proceeded with this idea despite my protest. They had to abandon it in the end because it turned out that having a bonfire of any sort was actually against regulation.
You see, stunts often don't work. I mean, they can help make the news. Like, I don't know, you send the leader out on a walkabout, as long as you don't do it, Neil Kinnock and fall into the sea. In fact, the sea can be perilous when it comes to party conferences. This is Gawain Towler, a former spinner for UKIP, talking about their conference at Margate.
It's 6:30 on one of those beautiful, bright autumn mornings that Margate does so well. And I'm standing there waiting for the conference to kick off. And sitting outside the conference hall with a cigarette and talking to one of the security guards, I noticed some members of Her Majesty's Press Photographers Corps scurrying or flitting or whatever they do in a different direction, running away from the conference centre. This obviously is of concern. So I footle down and chase after them. And what do I find? I find, writ large across the beach, in 20-foot high letters, "We love you, Nige." This has been written by a lovely chap by the name of Sam Gould. And he had done so because the previous day some Greens had scribbled rather ruder words on the beach. And so there he was, having done that, and the snappers were snapping away, and there was this horrible realisation that the tide was coming in and there was no way back. And thus, throwing all caution to the wind, I hootled down the groin to grab hold of the poor blight and hauled him over the wall and the fence. This was captured and I believe became one of the photographs of that particular election campaign. Sam Gould, one of the nicest, loveliest and kindest of men, whose natural response to any rudery was to laugh and find some fun way of responding to it, sadly died after a horrible, horrible young cancer. And I can only... I think of him often. One of the funniest, kindest of men.
That's Gawain Towler there, former spin doctor for UKIP. So those are the stunts that the parties might organise at party conference. But there to capture all you need, the snappers, like Stefan Russo, the Press Association's chief political photographer.
It's a one time of the year when you have all the politicians in one place, and they're kind of, you've got them captive for about a week in this sort of close, confined space of the conference area and the hotel. So we as photographers, we can, it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel. They're there in front of us. And, you know, you're there morning, noon and night. You're going to see odd things. And I remember a few years ago, it was an odd thing because David Miliband, who was Foreign Secretary at the time, it was lunchtime and all the politicians come out of the conference halls and they go for lunch at the various restaurants and cafes around town. And David Miliband was walking down a road. Bizarrely, he got kind of ambushed by the photographers just for a picture of him walking out. He was Foreign Secretary, but he had a banana in his hand. And he raised this banana as if to say, hi, look, you know, here's a banana. I don't know what was going on. And they took this picture, and this picture made everywhere the next day. And people were talking about this picture being a disaster for him, a PR disaster. It kind of started his downfall. And yet, I honestly, I couldn't work out why that was so significant. A man holds a banana. I really didn't get it. But those are the sort of silly things. You know, you get this cabin fever and there's this feeding frenzy over anything at party conference. And these things suddenly become huge. And I never get it. I'm not sure why.
And what are you hoping to find at either the Labour Party conference in Brighton or the Tory Party conference the following week in Manchester? What's the sort of dream photo? Is it sort of socialists drinking champagne? Is it, you know, Boris Johnson zip wiring into the conference centre? What's your dream photo out of a party conference?
Well, I mean, obviously, all those things you get, and all those things got, you know, every year you get less and less because the PR people realise, oh, we better not do that again. If you remember years ago, Neil Kinnock and his wife walking on the beach in Brighton on the first day of their conference, and he slipped when a big wave caught them, and he slipped and he got wet and he had to scramble up the beach. Now, we've never seen a politician go down on the beach since then. You know, so those sort of things, you get less and less. It gets tighter and more difficult to do. So honestly, we're lurking around outside the hotel, out the conference centre to get anything. It's difficult to know what you're going to get or what you're going to see. But, you know, the bizarre things, like I remember a few years ago, Damien McBride, a former advisor to Gordon Brown, was promoting a book on the seafront in Brighton. And there was a protester who used to turn up at all the party conferences. He was quite harmless. He would hold one of his banners for whatever campaign. It used to be nuclear power. And he would stand behind whoever we were photographing and sort of ambush the photo call in the hope that he'd get in the pictures on the TV. And Damien McBride was on Breakfast TV live that morning, and he stood behind him. And it was Ian Dale who was helping promote this book, got into a tussle with him behind the cameras. And this fight ensued as the interview was going on. And it was like one of those cartoon fights. You know, when you have this kind of cloud of smoke and arms and legs flying everywhere. This was going on behind the photo call. It was hilarious. It just made great pictures. So those sort of things, I couldn't say, look, I'm after that picture next week. You have got no idea what's going to happen. And that was one of those more bizarre moments.
Did you take, were you there for Ming Campbell pointing down a toilet?
I don't remember that either.
I think that must have been like 2006, 2007. They took him to an eco home and he was just, and it was like a disabled toilet. And he was just all the photos have been pointed out. Anyway, never mind. That's just what,
I mean, the other thing I was going to mention is obviously the other thing we're on the lookout for, the only time of the year you see the whole cabinet, or the whole shadow cabinet running. All politicians suddenly seem to become runners in party conference week. And so I spend so much time outside. You know, Cameron kind of started it. You'd be there at 6 a.m. waiting for him to go running. Then Boris goes running. And it's, you know, the whole town is just full of MPs running around town. I mean, Sports Direct must be rammed the week before when they're all buying their running gear.
Yeah, I'll almost certainly take my running gear and then not go running at party conference. That was Stefan Russo, the chief political photographer for PA. Now, a lot of thought goes into how a politician looks on stage when they're giving their speech. I mean, a lot of thought, from the lighting to the slogan to the lectern. And rehearsals take place throughout the week to avoid any mishaps, such as when the Lib Dems once opted for a glass lectern and with two glasses of water on it, it cast a shadow still remembered by Nick Clegg's former spin doctor, James McGorry.
It looked like Nick was very, very well endowed. To the people doing the excellent job on the lighting rig. And so we had to basically stick a big Lib Dem sign over the front to spare his modesty.
So if there's a large party sticker somewhere, you know why. So the big day comes, ready to head out onto the stage, but even at the last moment, things can go wrong. This is Vanessa Pine, who was a press advisor to Joe Swinson.
Joe and I were waiting in the wings, and the guy with the mic is standing there looking earnestly at her, and she's wearing quite a nice bright pink dress that's rather figure-hugging, and he's looking at her quizzically, not quite sure what to do with the little black box. And eventually we realised what we were going to have to do is unzip the back of her dress and hook the mic on the back of her bra, except that time is of essence, and she's basically standing there half naked in the wings whilst the intro music starts. And so there was this frantic faff about getting the dress back on just in the nick of time.
Yeah, Vanessa also wants to tell me that as conference week approaches, all politicians want to get the details right.
And the amount you agonise over the tiny little details, you know, like whether somebody's wave looks normal. And I mean, there are only a certain number of minutes you can spend thinking about whether a wave looks normal before you've gone completely mad yourself.
That was Vanessa Pine speaking to me on an old edition of the Red Box podcast. Well, it's not just the politicians who can have wardrobe worries. It's important that when you turn up to conference, you make sure you've packed properly. Top advice from Salma Shah, former Tory press officer and later special advisor to Sajid Javid.
Normally, when you go to a conference, there is a special advisor, long serving, whose name I won't mention, who always sent us a list of things that we would need and things that we should think about. And it ranged from everything like, you know, important numbers saved in our phones, a spare battery charger. And for the ladies, he would always specify to bring a spare pair of tights, which I actually started paying attention to after this incident occurred. And I remember this is when I was very young, very junior. We were still in opposition and it was Tory party conference. And I was doing the front desk at the press office. And that involves standing in a makeshift stand and trying to get people interested in the press releases, which nobody ever was. And I had snagged my tights on, one of the nails or something that was sticking out. I'd asked a friend, as she was nipping to the supermarket, to go and get me a pair of tights. Of course, I'm Asian, Southeast Asian heritage, and I'm actually relatively short. And she's English and actually quite tall and quite leggy. So she bought a pair of tights that would suit her and not me. I ended up being two different colours that conference with white legs, that with tights that didn't actually fit me, so that I was rocking a whole Nora Batty look. So I think the lesson for me there is to always ensure that you bring a spare pair of tights that actually fit you.
Salma Shah there on the fashion disasters that you can face when you're at party conference. I'll make sure I pack a spare pair of tights. So once you're dressed and rehearsed, all you have to do is go out there and deliver the speech you planned and hope that nobody upstages you. Well, Carolyn Lottin was a segment producer at Bloomberg TV at the Labour conference in 2006, Tony Blair's last conference as Labour leader. On the Monday afternoon, Gordon Brown walked to the podium to give his big speech as Chancellor. At that precise moment, Carolyn was making her way through the exhibition centre to the auditorium when she spotted a familiar face coming the other way.
Suddenly, I noticed Cherie Blair and entourage coming towards me. And there were not many people left anymore because people had gone inside the auditorium to listen to Gordon Brown. But she was coming straight towards me, and there were TVs everywhere with this, you know, showing the speech. And just as he said,
I've worked with Tony Blair for almost 10 years as Chancellor. It's the longest relationship of any Prime Minister and Chancellor in modern British history. And it has been a privilege for me to work with and for the most successful Labour Prime Minister.
She kind of did an offhand remark, and went, oh, that's a lie. I couldn't believe it. You know, there was one guy to the left of one of the exhibition stands, and he also heard it, I think. And we kind of looked at each other going, oh, can't believe she just said that. I mean, she didn't stop. She literally just walked straight past me.
How did these four words, well, that's a lie, get out and explode the Labour Party conference?
Well, I think I was probably a little bit naive. So I then went to where all of the Bloomberg news reporters, the Wire reporters, were sitting. Particularly Rob Hutton, who was obviously our Westminster reporter at the time. And he was listening to the speech, so wasn't really paying much attention to me. But I thought it was more of a funny little anecdote. So I said, oh, you're never going to believe what I just heard, what just happened. You know, Cherie Blair was coming towards me, and I heard her say, well, that's a lie, when he talked about Tony Blair. And Rob kind of looked at me, but then was like, oh, well, continue writing. And then, you know, we sat there, listened for a little bit. And then I had to go back actually before the speech finished, because we had to then get back live to do the analysis of the speech. So I headed back outside the anchor and found my guests to analyze what Gordon Brown had been saying. So unbeknownst to me, actually, they had then started, they decided to put out a story with this little snippet. And suddenly somebody said, oh, there's Sky News are looking for you. And I was like, why are they looking for me? He said, yeah, they want to talk about the Cherie Blair thing. They've got a camera crew here. At that point, it all became suddenly really serious. And actually, and they had one of those roaming camera crews, I think, where they could have gone live wherever they were. So actually, my senior producer, she kind of pulled me behind one of those advertising kind of hoardings. And we literally hid for a little bit from the Sky crew, because we just, you know, I had no idea what was going on. It all just had just blown up while I was running around.
And it really did blow up. And Downing Street denied it. Cherie Blair in the end said, honestly, guys, I hate to spoil your story, but I didn't say it and I don't believe it either. Because obviously this was Tony Blair's last party conference. It was the last one before Gordon Brown became Prime Minister. It was such a turbulent time. Gordon Brown was being accused of sort of undermining Tony Blair, oust him from number 10. Obviously, for years and years and years, there'd been sort of off-the-record reports of the tensions between Gordon Brown and Tony Blair. But what you'd got was you'd got someone right in the heart of it, Cherie Blair, confirming all of that. What was the fallout? What was the backlash from Downing Street like?
You know, I actually was very protected from that, because I never had any contact with them really. So I think Rob got like one phone call from them kind of shouting at him, going, this is not true. But you know, we all stuck by the story. And I think what was quite funny, they then changed the story saying, oh well, she was there, but she didn't say that's a lie. I think they were saying, can I get by? So there were all these like funny for stories coming out that they were you know, saying, yeah, she definitely said something, but she didn't say that's a lie. So I think the good thing, well, for us, from my point of view, is that obviously everybody believed me.
Just funny, then 15 years on from all of that, you've still got no doubt at all about what it was she said?
Absolutely not.
That's Carolyn Lottin there, who worked for Bloomberg TV and overheard Cherie Blair at that big, it was my first Labour conference I went to. And it was such a massive story, that. Well, sometimes the person delivering the speech has no one else to blame when things go wrong. This is Patrick Hennessy, former spin doctor for Ed Miliband and later Sadiq Khan.
As a conference disaster, nothing really comes close to my experience as Labour's deputy director of comms in 2014 in Manchester, when Ed Miliband, our dear leader and Prime Minister in waiting, we hoped, forgot a key section of his leader's speech, the bit about the economy. I can well remember the rising panic backstage when the full horror of what had happened dawned on us. For some reason, a number of my senior colleagues were unavailable, and it fell to me to deliver the post-speech briefing to the massed ranks of political journalists. We looked around for someone to blame for the disaster and alighted on the obvious person, Ed himself. In an effort to match the then Prime Minister David Cameron, Ed had vowed to memorise his entire speech and not rely on an auto cue.
But I will always remember.
Only he hadn't memorised it all. He forgot all about the economy. It was a gift for the Tories, and the lobby was in full cry. It was the second time in a few months I'd had to brief political journalists in the immediate aftermath of an unfortunate event. In the previous case, Ed's legendary efforts to get the better of a bacon sandwich. In such circumstances, there is little you can do except throw yourself on the mercy of the lobby and hope the resulting coverage is not too hideous. Some hope. I'm sometimes asked, how on earth can politicians memorise those long speeches? Well, in Ed's case, at least the answer is clear. He couldn't. Sorry, Ed.
I've known Patrick for a long time, and I'm very glad we've managed to put him to CeeLo Green. But sometimes no amount of preparation is enough. No amount of hoping that nobody will notice. No amount of crossing your fingers and hoping for the best will stop things going spectacularly wrong. Paul Harrison was Theresa May's press secretary from 2017 and 2019, and he still has nightmares about that speech at that conference in 2017.
My story is about why sometimes what happens at conference really doesn't stay there. Theresa May's second party conference as Prime Minister is probably the one that we all remember, and we remember it for all the wrong reasons. It was when, under quite a lot of pressure on Brexit and having gone backwards in that 2017 election, we arrived at conference trying to gather a bit of momentum, really. And during the speech, which at the Tory conference is always the last thing, the Prime Minister's speech is the last thing of the whole week, just everything went wrong. Some so-called comedian presented Theresa with a fake P45.
I was about to talk about somebody I'd like to give a P45 to, and that's Jeremy Corbyn. Yeah!
She subsequently lost her voice.
Public sector working together. Why? Why we will never. And we.
A bit of the stage fell down, and that kind of spectacle, sadly, and through absolutely no fault of her own, kind of became, I suppose, something of a metaphor. But anyway, unlike lots of people's conference unfortunate events or moments of regret, it was by that stage obviously the highest profile thing of the whole event. Everybody saw it, everybody remembered it, and it ended up overshadowing a speech that actually was very personal. And you know, one of the things I'd had to do, and that the press secretary always has to do for any prime minister, is give a briefing last thing after the final speech to all of the political journalists that have made the trip to that party conference. And I was a little bit nervous, it was the first one I'd ever done, and I'd kind of memorized a series of points that Theresa had made in the speech that I wanted to highlight for journalists on the basis of the fact I hoped that might inform a bit of their coverage the next day. And, you know, some of it was quite personal in the way we weren't really used to seeing from her. There was a reference to the fact that, you know, she and Philip had never been able to have children and how she regretted that. And it was quite a brave and quite an emotive speech. But, of course, we don't remember any of it. And having memorised all of these things as the speech went on, as the stage fell down after the P45 had been presented and clearly the PM had struggled with her voice, it just became clear that none of that was kind of appropriate. So as I shuffled out to do my briefing, knowing that this is going to be a pretty sporty 45 minutes in front of 60 eager, I just remember quite vividly saying, Greater Manchester Police have made an arrest for a breach of the peace, and then I'll take your questions. And that was it. Sometimes what happens at conference really doesn't just stay there. You gotta fight for your right.
Oh, I can't wait. all being well, next week and the week after, we'll provide some other stories that can join that. I think we'll describe that as an oral history of things that can go wrong at party conferences. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. We bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not wait and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.